Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting here with Rob O'Hearn, and we're across from Richard Krepney, who is here to talk about his new book, Fly, Life Lessons from the Cockpit, QF32. Welcome, Richard. And we're sort of discussing here that there's Rob and I have absolutely no chance in hell of saving as many people as you managed to save with your expertise in flying an enormous aeroplane back to safety. Even if we try from now, there's really little chance of that. We could be running out and trying to stop people from getting knocked over on crossings and things like that, but it's never going to happen. That is a lot of responsibility for one human being. And you do it as a job. Like it's a crazy thing to, I just have such confidence in pilots that I don't think about it when I'm flying, but it is on you all the time.
Well, thanks. First of all, thanks, John, and thanks, Rob, for having me. It's great to be here with Booktopia. The second thing is, yes, there are a lot of people under my responsibility, I'm responsible for, but it must be remembered this is a team effort. Pilots on aircraft are not fighter pilots. We don't fly by ourselves. And even fighter pilots these days have AWACS, airborne early warning and control. You know, fighter pilots fly in formation. All these operations, critical operations, are team effort. And you're in a team here at Booktopia, and you are responsible for the lives of many people that work here at Booktopia. And so maybe one there will be a crisis, and you might have to step up. And you could maybe on your way home, you'll do something which will influence and save the lives of hundreds of people. You never know what challenge might face you in the future, family, on your community, or at work. And the whole idea of fly is really about the elements of resilience, which is knowledge and training, experience, teamwork, leadership, crisis management, decision making, risk. I've included post-traumatic stress, because by the time people get to middle age, they have probably lost someone dear to them, and they've suffered great stress. They don't know why they feel the way they do, why it's affecting them, why they can't get over it. So I discuss post-traumatic stress, which is really part of resilience. And the final thing is that all these chapters sit on top of the topic of neuroscience, because plenty of people can say, this is how you do things, or this is what you do. And they might even say how, but they very rarely say why. And so Fly was 4 years in the making, and I did a lot of research in the neuroscience to work out why. Why do we have to do things? Why do we need to have these recipes for building a team? Why should leaders be empathetic? Why should people care? How should you set up a culture in a company so that people feel psychologically safe to stand up and say when things are not good or they're worried about safety? So the elements of resilience, which is the book of Fly, takes all these issues and they apply personally in your community, at work, your marriage. And half the people fail resilience at home because they get divorced, which can be expensive and tragic for your psychological well-being. So the elements of resilience and Fly is relevant to anyone from 17 years old. One journalist said it's the Bible for a 17-year-old, and it can apply to a 71-year-old, that they can still do things. They still need to have a lifetime of learning to jettison old information to make way for the new. So resilience is, everyone needs to be resilient, and because you never know when you're going to be challenged, regardless of whether you're in an aeroplane or driving home. And preparation, people who are prepared survive.
Well, you know, thinking about my own trip home, my own trip here today actually was the road I travel, which is a nice 3-lane road, it's generally got lots of traffic on it, was completely blocked off. Someone was suffering a terrible catastrophe up ahead, and the police were already in place. They were sending off in us in a different direction. 5 minutes earlier, and I might have been involved somehow in the incident ahead. And as you say, I might have to leap to someone else's aid. Someone else may have to leap to my aid. In the road that it happened on, there's definite chance of more people getting involved. So someone would have had to be clear thinking enough to try and slow down the traffic that's coming on around the corner. There's a whole range of things. So right, you're right. I don't even think about it. But in certain circumstances in daily life, these things come in handy.
Like, and there's a great quote, that great things happen when preparation meets opportunity. So if you've thought about these things, about driving home, where are you? Where are you located? If you have to call 911 suddenly, where are you on the road? How do you get an ambulance? Where do you know to tell the ambulance to come? How do you do these things? And secondly, some people say that I'm a hero and only heroes can do the things that we do on aircraft. But I think there are no heroic people. There are only heroic actions. And you can be just as heroic in your car on the way home and needing to do as many dramatic things as we do in the airplane. But it's a team effort. And we need to understand leadership. So when things go wrong, often people will have the herd instinct. They follow the masses. People in an airplane will follow the masses to the other end of the airplane when there's an exit right next to them. So even in a situation where there's an accident on the road, you could be a leader saying to someone, get off the road, here's turn around and go back and detour. So leaders are needed in all situations, because sometimes people in all situations, whether you're moving furniture at home or you're moving your office, there needs to be a leader to say, this is what we have to do, this is how we have to do it. And people are happy to follow instructions. So you could be anyone who's listening to this could be faced with a situation where they have to step up, and what their actions might save lives. And there's another great quote, which is, there are no great men, only challenges that ordinary men are forced by circumstances to meet. So when we analyze the elements of resilience and we know why they exist and how to form teams, how to be a good leader, the different types of leadership, how to recover from stress, when we're prepared in this way, when we're tackled by the unexpected or the unknown unknowns, the black swan events, the unforecast, dramatic events, when we're prepared like this, then instead of being startled into fight, flight, or paralysis and do nothing, we can keep calm and say, do you know what? I've read about this. I think I know what to do. Don't panic. Let's do this course of action. So preparation is essential. And that's what I've written this book. Resilience is a big topic, but you can resolve it to the 8 elements of resilience.
One of the interesting things I found in QF32 was how a lot of the decisions made were against the idea of standard operating procedure, because you chose not to land immediately, but to go around and to make sure the plane was safe and get more information on the factors involved. So there's a certain amount of not following straight checklists and procedures, because there may be something else going on. There is a certain amount of unknowns to you.
Well, when I went to fly the first fly-by-wire aircraft in my career, which was the Airbus A330, I researched all the other fly-by-wire accidents, because there was a lot of criticism of fly-by-wire and people thought it was dangerous. I researched that, I found out what had happened, how it came about and why, and then I discovered that it's a bit like your mobile phone. Your mobile phone now is harder to use than a rotary phone where you just swing a dial. You have to turn on your phone and you have to launch the phone application, but you can do a lot of things with that. So with everything in today's life, we can get into a car and just turn the key, the engine starts. We don't have to understand how it works. You do need, as it gets more complex, if you want to survive, if you want to be resilient, when the car breaks down, you just pull over and you have to be rescued. But if you're in an aeroplane, you have to understand the core of that aeroplane. So if you want to be resilient with high technology, where you have these big boxes, big black boxes, I talk to other big black boxes, and we don't know what's inside. If we don't make an effort to increase our knowledge and get deep into these systems, well, if we do, we can survive. We can do workarounds. If we don't, we become a victim of this high technology. And there's a term that I've created called automation amnesia. And that means the less you use a system, you actually lose the ability to remember how it works, and you become a whole lot more ignorant. So one of the chapters in my book is on knowledge. How to acquire knowledge, how to remember knowledge, the best way to repeatedly study, to remember something, how to put into memory so it can become a habit or an intuition rather than you having to think too deeply about it, how to learn things so that they flash back and give you comfort and they also regulate the fear response so that you don't panic. And also that knowledge needs to be creatively destroyed as you get older. There are things that do become laggard ideas, laggard knowledge, and they need to be cleared out of your brain to make way for new ideas. So just the topic of knowledge, automation, amnesia, and keeping knowledge current is, and a lifetime of learning is critical to resilience. And then that particularly applies to the elder people in society who are getting lonely. A great proportion of older people are at home alone, and they cannot afford to lose their connection with friends and relatives. And so part of the creative destruction they have to do is, well, they have to learn these new devices so they can do phone sessions and video sessions with friends and families to keep current. If they do that, if they keep their social reactions going, that is the strongest determinant that affects their longevity. So resilience applies to the eldest people in our society, how they have to adapt and change to use the latest technology. That will absolutely pay back and make their life longer and more enjoyable.
And how do you deal with the huge amount of knowledge and information that you have to get on top of? I mean, with the Airbus, you're talking about 250,000 sensors in the plane that's sending all sorts of messages to your ECAMS unit, which is telling you about what the hell is going on. And when you have a crisis like you faced, where you've got over 300 alerts coming up.
Well, it's easy to think. The manuals for cars will say push the turn, put the key into ignition, though some cars don't even have that. Some cars, they say push the button, the engine starts. Some people, they've never lifted the bonnet on their car. So you can survive in that world. When you have, in our case, 500 lives and your responsibility, I have to go deeper. So I, instead of going from the top down, looking at the system and going deeper perhaps, I start from the bottom up. I have to understand how the engine works, the theory, the chemistry of the jet engine and the aerodynamics, the propulsion. If I understand that, then everything else becomes clear. And not only that, if you understand the foundation to a technology, when the technology fails, you can chunk down or simplify it, work from the bottom up. And that's what we did on QF32. It was a bit like a junkyard wars where we just need to find enough wheels and enough wings to support us. And so we work from the ground up. And so when you invert the logic, which is another part in the book, when you invert the logic, when you can't keep up, when everything's overloading you and you don't understand and the technology is baffling you and you are overloaded, sometimes the only way out of that is to invert the logic. And instead of wondering what's failed, instead of wondering about 250,000 sensors and parameters on 380, which is correct, or the 4 million bits, you invert the logic and you say, do I just have enough fuel to drip into the engines? I don't need pumps or transfer galleries. Do I have enough wheels to sit on? And when you invert the logic, everything gets simpler. And that is, at times, that must be your plan, part of your plan for resilience. When the share market's going crazy and everyone's panicking, you have to have a foundation of simple knowledge about the industry to know what you're going to do and not join in the herd instinct and the panic.
Just out of curiosity, are you exceptional in your role to have an understanding, that deep an understanding of the plane, or is every pilot that I see walk past me in an airport as interested in from the tyres up through the engines into the all the different sensors, all have at least an idea of it? Is it part of their training? Are they required to continually keep up to date with what's going on? Or is it something you're trying to inspire not only in other pilots but in everyone in all their daily life to be more aware of all these?
In business, it's getting so complex that it takes years to understand whatever industry that you're in. And I've been flying now since 1975. And so I've had that base continually grow up. I've used a foundation of simple flying. Sally Sullenberger decided to land in the Hudson River because all pilots are told when they lose the engines, instead of panicking and turning and looking for and following distractive noises from other people, just look ahead, find some place ahead, because that's where you're going down, find some place and land on it. And chances are you're safer if you just accept your reality and then you plan, you prioritize, jettison the noise, prioritize, and just land. And that's what Sully did. So Sully is a great part of this book. Sully has many contributions to the book, as well as Gene Kranz from NASA, a lot of description of Neil Armstrong. And these are the most resilient people in the world. And so all these people have had this foundation of knowledge coming from the first days where they were flying, with Sully's being told, look ahead and land straight ahead. That's what he did. It's unusual to land on the river, but everyone got out.
Yep.
I mean, that's his using his knowledge that builds up with time. When Sully was landing on the Hudson, he had a book on safety management systems and just culture by a book called Sidney Decker. He had that book in the flight deck. Now, he's an exceptional, resilient pilot, but he's also commits to a lifetime of learning. So he's still learning and researching and getting rid of old information and getting new. And that's one of the key elements. The knowledge and the training is part of that is we have to commit to a lifetime of learning in our field to be the best that we can be. And then we can cater for these things. And the other interesting part to this is experience, that many people say, well, look, I've been in the, and I said it before, I've been a pilot for 42 years, but experience can be a curse. Many times you'll see people say at an accident site, oh, but we've always done it this way and it's always worked. Well, guess what? The science have changed. The tools have changed. They're now robots. You have to learn. If you're a doctor, you have to learn to work with robots. If you're a pilot, you have to learn to work with automated systems. And so if you expect things to be the same, then you're heading for disaster. Experience can be a curse. Experience is only good when you mix it with a lifetime of learning and adaption and change that brings risks. When you make a change, when you do something new, there's a risk it won't work. So even experienced people have to commit to a lifetime of learning, change, and risks. Some will work, some they don't. We have to learn to fail well. So when we fall down, we get up again and do it again. So if you accept these things, then experience can truly be profound.
So you said earlier on that a 17-year-old had this book. With education, with the way in which the world is right now, it seems to be specialisation is where people are heading. Like they're going into narrower and narrower bands for their careers. So in essence, you're asking people who are specialising and carving out little niches on their career path to keep aware of what's going on outside of their own areas and to keep learning outside of their own areas as well, to be more flexible in their thinking, to be up to date with what's going on in technologies that may be able to help their career, things that may not actually seem to apply. Would you change anything in the way we're educated? And that's what I was really trying
to get
to.
It's a two-pronged thought. Remember I said the elements of resilience, knowledge, training, experience, teamwork, leadership, crisis management, etc. Leadership. Now, there's leadership at home, there's parents, children, leadership at work. So, yes, you can be the best expert, but if you're sitting at the back of the office, no one understands what you're doing and you can't communicate or relate, then really you might be replaced by Google or a computer. So, yes, it's very important to have the knowledge and the training, the experience, but you have to have the communication, the leadership skills to be able to talk and translate stuff for other people and to lead other people. So for the engineer, that means they must get out to the front desk and talk and meet people. For leaders, they must mix with their staff. Politicians must get on public transport and see the people they're leading. On every flight, I walk the cabin and I talk to the passengers. So if there's something wrong, I can fix it. If the cabin crew there's something wrong with the cabin crew, I can fix it. I have a responsibility to know the status of the passengers and the aeroplane, and I do that every flight. So we have to bring in the E our EQ side into resilience, which is to be able to communicate and to care. So resilient companies have, well, first of all, the leader will set the culture that gives psychological safety for anyone to say, there's some problem in this factory floor, this operation's not safe and there could be a fire. They have to be able to say, look, I'm not happy with the structure, I'm not happy with what you're doing. That's psychological safety. The leader sets up that culture. The leader then looks after people and cares for them. Because when you care for an employee and you say, I trust them, and you delegate to them and you authorize them to do things, then those workers will take a risk for you. How many times do we go to a counter and the person at the counter says, look, I'd really like to help you, but I'd get sacked. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no psychological safety there. Mm-hmm. So the leader must give a psychological safety to where that same person would say, I understand. I'm feeling for you and I understand what you're going through. I'm going to authorize this and let's get it done. Now, that person at the counter takes a risk and they're going to make you happy and you're going to go back and sing the praise of the organization. So part of resilience, particularly in an organization, is that you set a culture where people can step up to say, stop. It's dangerous to say that we need to improve something. Now, when you do that, then the teamwork, you have a truly great team where they're taking risks for the company. And again, equilibrium is a precursor to death. If you're not changing, you're going extinct. And change brings risks, right? So some won't work. But if you, in a company, want to succeed, you have to enable your staff to step up and say stop, save your company from a crisis. And there is a risk in doing that, that maybe some decisions won't be ideal. That's part of the risk, but you have to do that. And that's what aviation does very well, where any pilot in my cockpit can stop a takeoff. And I tell them, you must tell me if something's wrong, because it's too late when we get airborne. Mm. And that's what people need in companies. NASA should have stopped the Challenger takeoff when Rob Ebeling said, it's not safe. So NASA learned about that. So the setting up the culture, letting people step up, these are emotional intelligence types things. That is not the standard thing you learn in a book. But it's vital if you want a team that's going to work with you and save your company and protect it.
Richard, thank you so much for coming in. There's so much. I mean, just talking to you is an extraordinary opportunity. Thank you very much for that. And the lessons that are in this book, I mean, I feel like now walking the street and thrusting into everyone I know hands. You've sold it so well. And I can see the ideas are so useful. And so, you know, if we put some of this into practice, if we start to think in the way that you're suggesting we think, right into old age, you know, our lives will be longer, as you said, but and more fruitful.
Longer and more enjoyable.
More enjoyable. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
And you can get hold of Fly at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.